Mic check, mic check. 1, 2, 3. This is episode 104 of the Sound Off here on SEScoops.com for Sunday, March 21st, 2010. I am the Solemn Monster. This is my show. Thank you so much for downloading the podcast. And apologize a little later in the weekend here, but got tied up with some family business. That's how it goes. And I am here, and I'm here to be the bearer of some bad news if you are a TNA fan. Of course, we'll get to that in just a moment. I guess we'll start off with some Raw and Impact notes. I'm going to try to go in order. We'll cover a couple different things here, and then I'll break into the expanded mailbag this week because I've gotten so much feedback. I figured let me just dedicate some time to that. So on that note, I hope you all have had a very good weekend wherever you may be in this world. I certainly had an enjoyable one myself, and I had a good time watching Raw Monday night. It was actually a good show overall, but let's be honest here, it was made by what was a very, very good closing segment. Bret Hart and Vince McMahon sealed the deal for their street fight, or no-holds-barred match, as it were, at WrestleMania 26. It will be Bret the Hitman Hart one-on-one with Vince McMahon, and sure as shit, as I said on this podcast just a couple of weeks ago, Bret Hart was, of course, faking his injury, and as I suspected and hoped they would do, Steve Austin officiating the contract signing. Bret Hart reveals he is in fact not injured after Vince McMahon signed an ironclad contract. There is no way he can get out of it. He is pretty much up Schitt's Creek. As Bret said, Vince screwed Vince. Very well done. Just the way that Vince spun around in his chair during that segment. You see the cast sitting there on the table. Just awesome, awesome stuff. Played to perfection. Steve Austin takes a bow so as not to take away from the attention on WrestleMania, because obviously Austin won't be there. Austin will not be officiating the match, as some people thought he might be doing. And he wanted to step aside, as he said on his Twitter page after the show. He didn't give anybody a stunner, which I know disappointed a lot of people. But the focus was on WrestleMania, 2 weeks away. Steve understood that. And it just wasn't the time nor the place, said Stone Cold on his Twitter page. Speaking of Stone Cold, really good job as guest host. Austin looking really good, really fit. Obviously promoting his movie Damage, which is out this Tuesday on DVD, and working on some other projects as well. Not a lot of Stone Cold during the show. Very forgettable in some ways as a guest host, but I thought he did a hell of a job. He was probably one of my favorite ones. By no means was he the best, but he did a very good job. And got a big pop, big reception when he came out. I was really happy to see that. It was comical to me the times that they edited his salty language, and of course the censors failed multiple times to bleep out the word ass, at least the first time the word actually slipped through on the USA feed. But it was fine. It's a little weird seeing Austin in a PG-era WWE, and it just shows me that there's no way Stone Cold could be Stone Cold if he ever came back. It's probably better off that he doesn't come back. You know, from what I understand, Vince McMahon was kind of freaking out a little bit backstage when Steve was drinking beer in the ring. I don't know why Vince wouldn't have thought he would be doing that. It's little things like that that WWE tries to get away from because they are PG-oriented. They have that big toy deal with the Mattel toy company, and Stone Cold just doesn't fit into that. But for one night, he was on his A-game. We had a couple of WrestleMania rematches throughout the night. Not one of these matches did anything for me at all. John Cena and Big Show, I can live an entire lifetime and never see that match and be very happy. This was not the worst of the matches between them that I've seen, but it was pretty forgettable. Big Dave comes out, causes the distraction. Big Show basically beat Cena clean with a punch. I know it looked like they were going for a different kind of finish where Batista distracted Cena, but it didn't work out that way. You know, Big Show essentially slipped out of an FU or an attitude adjustment, whatever you want to call it, punched it. Cena in the face, knocked him out, 1, 2, 3. Big Show wins. Hopefully that does not mean he becomes number one contender if Cena wins the belt at the pay-per-view. Shawn Michaels and Chris Jericho didn't go terribly long. Of course, Jericho takes a powder for the count-out finish. Edge comes out, spears him. Good way to keep some heat on their match for WrestleMania, which in some ways has been lost in the shuffle. Certainly, I don't think that's a match that should go on last. I don't care if Edge won the Royal Rumble. Doesn't matter. That really only belongs to one match. Triple H and Randy Orton had what was not a bad match. In fact, in some ways, it may have been better than the WrestleMania match they had last year on pay-per-view. But again, Triple H and Randy Orton, it's like seeing a Big Show. If I live an entire lifetime and never see another match between these two guys, that's okay. I would be completely fine with that. Sheamus, of course, Legacy, rear their ugly heads, which leads to a handicap match. I'm just waiting for WWE to create a pay-per-view called Handicap Match. Triple H and Randy Orton as tag team partners next week against Legacy and Sheamus, because we all know that, you know, if Randy Orton assaulted and planted a wet kiss on your wife, you too would be able to coexist with the man, I'm sure. This is the type of thing that would have benefited from a backstage interview before the show went off the air. They used to do these in the old days. They don't do them anymore, I guess, because it's too old school for Vince McMahon. It's too wrestling for Vince McMahon. But, you know, have Josh Matthews in the back with Triple H on one side, Randy Orton on the other. They're bickering back and forth, talking about their tag match next week. We didn't get any of that, so we have no idea how either man feels. I'm sure they'll run into each other in a backstage skit during hour one next week, and, you know, whatever. Not a match that really does anything for me, but I get the impression they're just trying to fill time. They had a lot of weeks to promote WrestleMania, and they've done a phenomenal job. The problem with that is maybe they had a little too much time, because now it almost seems in some cases like they're spinning their wheels. They're trying to come up with shit between now and March 28th to put on TV. The only thing I hope is they don't screw it up. There's only 1 week left. I don't see how they could possibly screw up the big matches. In fact, I would imagine next week's Raw will be loaded up with awesome promo videos to send these matches home. And that's all you need to do. This pay-per-view sells itself. I mean, I know there's a UFC pay-per-view that Saturday that's going to take a bit of a bite potentially out of WrestleMania, but I think WrestleMania this year is big enough on its own that if anything, UFC should be concerned about WrestleMania taking a bite out of their buy rate. I think this is a show that domestically, should be able to do about 1 million pay-per-view buys. Will it? I don't know. I really don't. The most recent WWE pay-per-view numbers that we have are for the Royal Rumble, and those were in the 400,000 range, which is actually, I think, slightly down from what it did last year. But to go from the numbers they've been doing recently on pay-per-view, even though it is WrestleMania, but to go up to 1 million may be a bit of a stretch, but I think they could do it. And I hope they do. I want them to be rewarded for what has been a superb build-up to their biggest show of the year. There's a lot of lessons in here. And if they do a good number, maybe, just maybe, they'll take some of what they learned from building up this WrestleMania and apply it to some of their other pay-per-view shows that are not quite as important. I noticed, obviously, in the Batista-Kofi Kingston match later in the show, Kofi busted open Big Dave hard way towards the end of the match. Thank God it was almost perfect timing in a way, because after he kicked Batista in the head and busted him open, right between his eyes, Batista was bleeding. It was pretty much time to go to the finish anyway, and Batista killed him dead. So at least Batista didn't have to wrestle half a match bleeding. Of course, the referee put the gloves on, and he wanted to wipe the wound. Batista would have none of that. You know, it's just funny to see how they freak out over these things. I compliment them, and I applaud them for, you know, eliminating the art of blading and wanting to protect their talent. But you know what? When people get busted open hard way like this, especially if it's going to add to the match, just let it go. Just go with the flow. And I was happy to see Batista basically look at the referee and give him a death stare and say, you better stay the fuck away from me because you ain't going to stop this match to clean this cut on my head. So anyway, just makes Dave a bit more of a badass, which fits his persona perfectly. Now, speaking of Kofi Kingston is the one superstar on the roster. Now, granted, he's more or less a jobber to the stars these days, but still, Kofi was on the receiving end of a pretty big push just a few months ago. And of all the guys on the roster, Raw or SmackDown, that have had any sort of push recently, he's essentially the only one left off the WrestleMania card. Now, I think there's still a chance he may be added to Money in the Bank and make it a 10-man match, but that has not officially been announced as of yet. If Kofi Kingston is left off WrestleMania to compete in some sort of dark match before the pay-per-view, I sure as hell, you know, think that that's a travesty. And I know we have people listening to this show because they've emailed me who are not big Kofi Kingston fans. They say he's sloppy in the ring, he's not good on the mic. I disagree with that, but to each their own. But I think he's certainly deserving of a spot on the WrestleMania card. You have so many matches, you're trying to fit so many bodies for a WrestleMania payday on this show. For Kofi to be left out, to me, when Jack Swagger, who's been in the doghouse for months now, has a spot in the Money in the Bank match, just doesn't seem right to me. So I think he still might make it on there in Money in the Bank. Make it a 10-man match at this point. What difference does it make? There's still way too many guys, in my opinion, in that match. But, you know, you made your bed, you may as well lay in it. Just add him in there. He deserves a spot as much as anybody. I mean, certainly busting Dave open will not do him any favors. But that sort of struck me during Raw Monday night, as Kofi seems to be the odd man out here, and I can't quite... I know they gave up on him. They blamed him as if it wasn't their own fault for you know, doing the wrong things with him when he was in the midst of his big push. But they essentially gave up on him. But that doesn't mean he does not deserve a slot, you know, in the biggest show of the year. To me, it's a crock. He deserves it. He's a good athlete. I think he's gotten a raw deal. I don't expect him to win Money in the Bank or anything like that, but I certainly think he deserves a spot in there when you have fucking Dolph Ziggler, you know, and Matt Hardy and his big gut in that match. And we know Matt Hardy is not exactly the, you know, the most beloved face backstage in the office, or so, you know, so is written by enough people. I think Kofi certainly deserves a spot. Gorgeous George announced for the WWE Hall of Fame. Apparently this is part of a deal where WWE is going to be producing a movie about the life of one Gorgeous George, I think adapted from the book on his life that was released a few years ago. Certainly no argument for me. Not the most titillating announcement of a Hall of Fame inductee, but nobody can deny Gorgeous George is just one of those names that people know. It's a household name. He truly was a certainly among the biggest, if not the biggest, not just wrestling star, but television star. When television was first created, Gorgeous George was on TV. Everybody knew who Gorgeous George was. People still refer to him today. You know, he's up there in that respect, in that kind of upper echelon with people like Hulk Hogan, you know, and Andre the Giant. You know, people kind of throw these names at, even if they're not wrestling fans. They may have no idea who these people are, but you've heard of these names before. And Gorgeous George, I think, is deserving of a spot in the Hall of Fame. And we have one slot remaining. It will not be the Ultimate Warrior. But this Monday night, I would presume Pete Rose, baseball great Pete Rose, will be co-hosting, or rather, he will be guest hosting Monday Night Raw. He's a baseball guy. It would make sense for him to somehow make the announcement that Mr. Baseball himself, Bob Uecker, is going into the WWE Hall of Fame. I expect that to be made official on Monday. Bob Uecker was a baseball player, not a very good one, as I recall, but he was a baseball player. Stumbling over my words here. Let me just take a sip of water. No Jack and Coke this week. The alcohol. I only bust out the alcohol for the special occasions. I'll tell you what I remember Bob Uecker for, besides his two WrestleMania appearances. And he did appear at WrestleMania 3 and 4. And, you know, the scene of him being choked out backstage by Andre the Giant, wrapping his hands around his neck and squeezing. Him chasing Vanna White was like a show-long storyline. You know, Vanna White, he's going to impress her. He wants to meet her. He can't find her until the end of the show. That was WrestleMania 4. But he was the star, one of the stars, of a TV sitcom here in the States called Mr. Belvedere back in the 80s that I was actually quite fond of. I think Mr. Belvedere actually came out on DVD for the first time last year. If you haven't seen the show, you know, I don't know if you can find it on YouTube or some torrent site or just buy the DVDs. I certainly won't endorse any illegal activity here, but if you're into those kind of campy old-school 80s TV sitcoms, the way that they used to be made, Mr. Belvedere, I thought, was a really good one, and Bob Uecker was a star on that show. He is now an announcer for the Milwaukee Brewers baseball team, and the thing is, WWE has been trying to put him in their celebrity wing of the Hall of Fame for a couple of years now, and the only reason he has not gone in was because it just didn't jive, it didn't fit in with his schedule, and this year it did, and he said he would accept. And so he will be there. I believe he is being inducted by Dick Ebersol, who is the head of NBC Sports and a good friend of Vince McMahon. He also happens to be a dick. I've never met the guy before, but see, I'm a Conan O'Brien fan. And during the whole late-night TV controversy a couple of months ago, everybody at NBC seemed to be piling on Conan O'Brien as he was getting ready to leave the network. It was a bitter divorce. Hopefully he'll end up on Fox very soon, but... Dick Ebersol spoke up during that whole controversy and had a lot of very derogatory things to say about Conan O'Brien. So a hearty fuck you to Dick Ebersol. I don't think very highly of him. So that takes care of your class of 2010 WWE Hall of Fame. there's no one singular person that kind of is the end-all, be-all this year like you've had in recent years, where Hulk Hogan was the focus one year, Ric Flair was the focus another year, Bret Hart in 2006, Stone Cold Steve Austin last year was the kind of the head of the class. And in the future, you'll have guys like The Rock who will eventually go in. He'll be the star of his class, and Shawn Michaels, and so on and so forth. You know, as much as I love The Million Dollar Man, and Antonio Inoki is a huge star in Japan, more so than in the U.S., you don't have that one guy this year that I suppose you would have had the Ultimate Warrior not backed out. But that's fine. I still think they put way too many people in the Hall of Fame each year, but what do I know? So that's coming up on March 27th. We also found out, I would be remiss if I did not mention, that Stu Hart is in fact going into the Hall of Fame. Again, I predicted, I believe, that Steve Austin would be the one to make the announcement, and that's exactly what happened. He basically forced Vince McMahon to accept the fact that Stu Hart was going to go in the Hall of Fame, and he asked Vince, do you have a problem with that? And Vince took a gulp and said, no, I don't have a problem with that, because if Stu Hart goes into the Hall of Fame, that means all of the Hart family members are going to be there, and he insulted the entire family, and we'll see what happens. I know that there was some news items saying that Tyson Kidd, I believe, one member of the Hart Dynasty, was actually scheduled for an Access Fan Festival session at the same time the Hall of Fame is going to be taking place. I would hope they correct that, because that, you know, for the entire Hart family to be there, and Tyson's not an official member of the family, but he may as well be, you know, not just because he's you know, David Hart Smith's tag team partner, but, you know, he trained with them. He's been kind of an honorary member of the family in some ways for a number of years now, and, you know, hopefully he'll be able to be at the Hall of Fame to see Stu get inducted. So that takes care of the Hall of Fame this year. I guess let's talk a little bit about Impact. I did not watch the entire show. In fact, the only thing I can remember of Impact on Monday night was part of the main event, which was an unadvertised, on TV, it was an unadvertised match. Main event non-title match between TNA champion AJ Styles, excuse me, and Jeff Hardy. Certainly a pay-per-view caliber main event, or is it? When the ratings came in on Tuesday, you certainly would not know that you had two stars the caliber of AJ Styles and Jeff Hardy in the ring together, because Impact, of course, tanked on Monday night. That's what happens when you have a big marquee match that you do not promote in advance, except on your Twitter page. Yes, if you are Dixie Carter, you will promote the shit out of the first ever Jeff Hardy AJ Styles match on your Twitter page. Right. Anyway, it wasn't even a good match, in my opinion. I think the two of them are capable of having a much better match. Jeff Hardy essentially beat AJ clean. I mean, that's the way I looked at it. It's not as though Abyss factored directly into the outcome. He was certainly out there. He made his presence felt at the end of the show. But Jeff Hardy essentially beat the TNA champion clean. Now, mind you, this was 2 days before the possibility that Jeff Hardy would have been sent to prison. Now, what ended up happening was, on Wednesday, Jeff Hardy was supposed to face the charges that are pending against him in North Carolina. The defense was able to get a continuance from the judge, yet another delay of this stupid case until May. So Jeff Hardy is essentially free until May, and in May, I'm sure it'll be delayed again, and it'll be delayed again and again and again. So, anyway, TNA has no problem, of course, putting a person like this, who could be jailbait, over their champion less than a week before their pay-per-view, when AJ is defending the belt against Abyss. In fact, I am recording this podcast at the exact moment that Destination X is now on the air. I didn't think very much of this Impact show. It was, again, it's hard for me to judge just because I didn't see the entire show. I didn't think there would be a replay on Thursday night, because Dixie Carter, on her own Twitter page, explicitly stated earlier in the week there would be no Impact replay on Thursday night. Every website, including TNA's own website, said as much. And by the time I found out there was, in fact, going to be a replay on Thursday, which there was, that was a Spike TV decision. It was too late. I wasn't able to record it. I wasn't home. I didn't see it. I can't say I missed much, based on the results that I read. What's interesting is that the Impact replay on Thursday, much like the week before, basically got the same rating that the original airing got. At least this week, the numbers were identical. I think last week the replay was up there. It wasn't quite the same number. This tells me that Spike is likely going to at least consider keeping this replay around on a permanent basis. Maybe even keeping the spot warm for TNA, because if they keep posting numbers like they did for Impact this week, they may be back on Thursday nights before you know it. When the ratings came in on Tuesday, I can tell you, based on things that very reliable people were saying, the people in TNA were not very happy. In fact, some of them were quite depressed. Raw, of course, went up this week to a 3.7. I think the show ended with the final quarter hour or the overrun doing something over a 4 for the contract signing. And the contract signing just crushed Jeff Hardy, AJ Styles. Impact at a 0.8 this week. There is no way to spin that number. There was no fancy press release from Spike TV. There was nothing, because what can you really say? They got annihilated this week. And I think this week coming up, tomorrow night, Monday night, is going to be a turning point for this company. You can make the argument that if they learn anything from that March 8th show, it didn't really matter this past week, because that show that you saw on Monday was taped the day after that very first show. So for all intents and purposes, they get a fresh start tomorrow night. Impact is live. If they learn anything at all, we will find out tomorrow night. If we get the exact same show that we got the last 2 weeks, I don't know what to say. And I'm not even saying the shows the past 2 weeks were horrible. What I'm saying is clearly whatever they're doing is not working. It just seems like they're throwing too many things out there at once. If they can pace themselves a little bit better and just tweak things a little bit. Of course, the biggest change they could make is the one that they won't, which is replacing Vince Russo as head writer. So if we accept the fact that he's going to be around for a while, at least until Bischoff and Hogan decide to make him their scapegoat if the numbers keep going down, maybe that's what we need. Maybe the numbers have to keep going down. Maybe Dixie Carter will be forced to make a decision at that point. Let's see how Impact is this week. Let's see if they learned anything from the numbers that came out over the last 2 weeks. And we'll leave it at that. I'm not gonna bash them. I'm not gonna trash them too much. Maybe they'll make their shows better. Maybe the numbers will go up. Maybe they'll put on an excellent show tomorrow night, and the numbers will go down even more. Which would tell me that maybe Monday just isn't a good idea. I said it was an experiment they had to do. They're doing it. If they continue to fail, the worst thing that happens is, it's a little embarrassing, but you go back to Thursday nights. That's really what it boils down to. But I can tell you, there has been nothing on Impact that has gotten me terribly excited. Now, maybe I'm a little caught up in WrestleMania fever. Maybe this was the absolute worst time for them to start going head-to-head with WWE. On the road to WrestleMania, a WrestleMania, mind you, that has been superbly promoted, unlike last year. This may have just been a matter of poor timing for TNA. Now, I said to somebody, I think on Twitter, that the numbers so much now don't matter as much as the numbers as of April 5th. Because on April 5th, WrestleMania and the night after WrestleMania are a thing of the past. And that'll be the next time after tomorrow night that Impact goes live. Now, somebody pointed out to me after the fact that there's some sort of, I think, NCAA or there's some sort of sporting event that night, so it may not make a difference. You know, wrestling may take a hit that night anyway. Okay, so the next week then, April 11th or whatever that next Monday is. But if the numbers really don't change by then, you know, Spike TV is going to make a decision, and it may not be the decision that TNA wants to hear. But I can tell you that there was nothing on these shows that really excited me all that much. You have Ric Flair coming out in the opening segment bleeding. Why is he bleeding? I mean, I know his skin is about as thin as tissue paper, but it's almost like you go from one extreme to the other. In WWE, they don't want any blood at all. For the most minor of cuts, if there is any amount of blood, unless it's coming from your mouth, they will stop the match. They will put on the leather gloves. They'll whip out the towel. Life, as we know it, will halt as they tend to that wound. And it's comical. On the flip side, TNA seems to think that, well, we're going to give fans something they can't see on that other channel. We're just going to give them blood all the time. Why not just have everybody bleed in every segment so it doesn't mean anything anymore? I mean, I'm watching Mr. Anderson and Kurt Angle, you know, which is a feud that started out promisingly enough, and now it doesn't mean anything. I mean, we've already seen Kurt Angle get his revenge. Why should we give a shit that these two guys are having a pay-per-view match tonight? Anyway, I flip on Impact, and I see Kurt Angle laying in a pool of his own blood, literally with blood dripping from his temple. And, of course, Kennedy, you know, he's got blood all over him, and I'm thinking to myself, why? Why is Kurt Angle bleeding? Why are we seeing this? It just didn't make any sense to me. To see Angle get his revenge a week or two ago, whatever it was, on Mr. Anderson, and have the army members around the ring beating him up too, it just seemed like that's the sort of thing you should have saved for the pay-per-view. I have no interest in this feud whatsoever. I mean, I didn't give two thoughts to ordering Destination X, not that I was going to order it anyway, because I'm ordering WrestleMania, but this pay-per-view, this is actually a great example. As well as WWE has promoted WrestleMania, TNA has taken the opposite approach with Destination X. They're approaching this as Lockdown is our big pay-per-view. And this pay-per-view tonight doesn't mean anything. It means nothing. I had people email me who didn't even realize there was a TNA pay-per-view tonight. And then I didn't realize it until they pointed it out to me. I went to the TNA website a couple of days ago, and they had a graphic up for a Knockouts title match involving Tara, and it said, First Blood. And I thought to myself, I know I haven't been paying as much attention to all the TNA storylines as WWE, but I don't remember hearing anything about a First Blood women's match on TV. And you know what? There's a good reason why. There is none. That was one of the original plans. They abandoned it. But yet, their own website is promoting it as a First Blood match. And then they took it down. But how many people saw that and think that they're going to see a First Blood match? I mean, it's just, again, they got to get their act together. They really do. I mean, you want to take it to WWE, that's fine. Competition is a great thing. You could compete with WWE without making this a war. TNA chose to make this a war. They mentioned WWE. They mentioned Vince McMahon. They say, we're going to take it to them. You know, we're going to beat them. Hulk Hogan goes on radio a couple of weeks before March 8th and says that Impact is going to do a 3. Do these people really believe this? Are they delusional? Do they need help? I'm watching Impact on Monday night, and I see Scott Hall against Kevin Nash in 2010. Now, I've become a very big fan of Last Call with Scott Hall. I know some of you are aware of this. Many of you are not. Scott Hall has this web series. It's on his website, but it's also, and then the people post the videos on YouTube. It's part of Scott Hall TV. Essentially, all it is Scott Hall walking around with a handheld camera focused on him, and then he'll film other things around him. And he's just being himself. So there's one video where he's backstage on the lot at Universal before an Impact taping with Sean Waltman, and they're talking, and they're interviewing other wrestlers as they walk by and making fun of people. And it was funny. A couple of other videos of Scott Hall hanging out with, of all people, Larry Zbysko, who you may recall he feuded with in WCW. These videos are more entertaining than Impact. I'm not even joking. These videos are awesome. I think if you put Last Call with Scott Hall on TV and expanded it to an hour, let's say, that hour would do better than all of Impact would. And that's pretty sad. Scott Hall, with a camera in hand, I'm there. Scott Hall in sweatpants wrestling in a match against Kevin Nash, of all people? Yeah, that's not my idea of must-see TV. Now, do I think that Kevin Nash is going to turn on Eric Young tonight? I don't know. He might. Wouldn't surprise me to see them put Hall and Nash back together with Waltman, reform the Wolfpack or something. I think there's a pretty good chance, in fact, that that will happen. Is that really what people are going to pay to see in 2010? I mean, the NWO came back in WWE in 2002, and these guys were in better shape than they were now, and it didn't even draw that well then. What makes them think that in 2010 they're going to do any business with this? So, that's what I'm going to say about Impact. It's kind of a broken record with them, but let's see. Tomorrow is another fresh start. Just keep in mind, you can only have so many of those before the well will run dry eventually. But Solomonster is a very giving person. very understanding. I'll give him another shot. I will gladly flip around tomorrow night. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of video promo packages on Raw. It'll be not what I would consider must-see TV. It's the final push to WrestleMania. Maybe I'll flip on to Spike TV during that time. I hope I like what I see. Now, switching gears here for a second, I just want to mention this. WrestleMania, of course, is 1 week away. I, for one, am very excited about this pay-per-view. A lot of big matches on the show. Not even, you know, there's a unified tag team title match. There'll be some sort of Divas match, Money in the Bank ladder match. But there's so much more than that. Triple H and Sheamus, not a match I particularly care about. Although I am curious to see how they handle Sheamus, considering he's one of Triple H's chosen ones. I think he'll be handled well, but if Triple H pins him clean with a pedigree, he'll kill him dead. That is the absolute wrong outcome for that match. I hope that does not happen. CM Punk and Rey Mysterio. Mysterio loses. He has to join the Straight Edge Society. Now, they were talking for a long time about having a mask versus hair match. That would likely result in Punk being shaved, which is why he's been growing out his beard and his chest hair and everything and his hair for so long. I think this is probably the first of maybe a 2 or 3 match series on pay-per-view, and I think that match will come later on. Then again, Mysterio is hurting. He needs surgery. And he himself has said that he wanted to make it to WrestleMania, and after WrestleMania would have surgery on his knee. Obviously, he may be putting that off a little bit longer. Punk and Mysterio, stuff that I've seen on SmackDown has been phenomenal. I mean, they had a match on SmackDown 2 weeks ago that I thought was great. And when Rey was in the ring with his family last week, celebrating, I think it was his daughter's birthday, and Punk came out with SES and was singing happy birthday and just generally being creepy. That's the heel CM Punk I used to talk about on this podcast before they started letting him be a heel. I mean, we've already seen how great he can be, but this is really proof positive that Punk was born to be a heel. I'd love to see him hold the World Heavyweight Championship again while he is doing this. He's just great. And I think him and Mysterio will have a fine match at WrestleMania that I look forward to very much. It's Punk's biggest match at a WrestleMania. He's won Money in the Bank the last 2 years. Now he is in a real match that means something. And I think him and Mysterio could have a show-stealing match. Of course, you've got 2 title matches, and you've got 2 other matches, either one of which could main event the show. I don't expect Bret Hart and Vince McMahon to main event the show, nor do I think they should. Probably put that in the middle somewhere. But it's my understanding that WWE has not yet made a decision on which match will end the show. It's obviously going to be either Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker or John Cena and Batista. Either one would make sense. Cena-Batista is for the championship, and it's been built up very well. I would not be overly offended if that match went on last. However, I maintain there is only one match that deserves to end that show. Even a lot of the wrestlers would admit this, because they've said it themselves on their Twitters and in interviews they've been doing building up the pay-per-view. Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker is the match on this show. Can they live up to what they did last year? It's going to be hard. It's going to be really hard. Obviously, they're going to have a different match. This match is no disqualification. You've got the streak versus career stipulation. There may be more gimmicks than there were last year. This may not be as great of a straight wrestling match with psychology as they had last year. I'm sure that'll be part of it. But remember, these two guys, especially Undertaker, is more beat up than they were last year. And you can't copy the same exact match. they pulled out all the stops last year. I don't see how you can possibly top it. So they're going in a different direction. Doesn't mean the match is going to be worse. But I still think we're going to get a hell of a match. And the key here is the emotion that's involved. Let us not lose sight of the fact that we're talking about all these different things. We could very well be 1 week away from the end of Shawn Michaels' career. And that, I think, is a point that's kind of been lost in the shuffle here. Everybody expects, well, I shouldn't say everybody, but most people, I think, it's safe to say, expect that Shawn will lose this match. And his career, quote-unquote, will be over. Now, for as much as you can believe that somebody would actually adhere to a retirement stipulation, I don't believe for a second that this is Shawn Michaels' last match. but it may be quite a while, maybe even the last time in 2010, that we see Shawn Michaels wrestle a match. And this is the day that we were all fearful of. We always said, you know, when Shawn Michaels is gone, you know, the Raw brand will suffer, WWE will suffer. It's going to be a sad day as a wrestling fan when Shawn hangs up those boots. And even if it's not permanent, he ain't going to be around for a while. And that's sad, because Shawn is such a good performer. And I think he elevates the game of whoever he's in the ring with. And, you know, I suppose it's possible that Shawn could pull out the victory here, but I don't expect it. I am not buying it. They've done a tremendous job of planting the little seeds of doubt. I'm not falling for it. I love it. I love the way they built this match, but I still firmly believe Undertaker goes 18-0. There's no doubt in my mind that he will go 18-0. But if we are looking at the end of Shawn Michaels' career, you know, a bit of reflection. I think you're looking at the career of a man that you could argue is the greatest of all time. Now, you could say the same thing about Bret Hart. You could say the same thing about Steve Austin. You could say the same thing about a lot of different guys. Some guys were better wrestlers than others. Some guys were better showmen than others. Nobody would argue that Hulk Hogan was a better wrestler than Bret Hart or Shawn Michaels. But did Bret Hart or Shawn Michaels sell as many tickets or as much merchandise? No, not at all. And they are by no means a household name like Hulk Hogan. Who is the greatest of all time? It's a very subjective thing. Shawn Michaels will go down as somebody. It's kind of eerie in a way how his career and Bret Hart's career mirror each other. Here are two guys that started out as tag team wrestlers, tag team specialists, who graduated to highly successful singles careers as world champions. Future Hall of Famers, if you're Shawn Michaels. Bret Hart, of course, is already in the Hall of Fame. And as an in-ring performer, few could hold a candle to either one of them. Bret was a little more scientific, I think, than Shawn. Shawn was flashier, did more high-flying moves. But nobody can deny that Shawn will go down as one of the greatest of all time. I have thoroughly enjoyed most, certainly, not all, but most of his WrestleMania matches. In fact, last year, the fact that he was facing The Undertaker in a match that I had been begging WWE to do since Shawn came back in 2002, that match taking place is what sold me on WrestleMania. I came very close to taking a pass on WrestleMania last year because they just did such a horrible job of building it up, and money, of course, is not as plentiful as it once was with the economy being what it is. These pay-per-views are not cheap. Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker, that was enough to make me plunk down $50 of my money, 55, whatever it was, to see him and Undertaker have one of the greatest matches I've ever seen. I mean, his matches at WrestleMania with Chris Jericho, Vince McMahon. I mean, talk about a match I wasn't looking forward to that overachieved in every conceivable way. I mean, Shawn carried Vince McMahon to what I thought was perhaps, maybe aside from Edge and Mick Foley, the match of WrestleMania 22. I'm not as big of a fan of his match with Steve Austin at WrestleMania 14. I mean, I could respect the fact that his back was all messed up, but I didn't think that was really a great match. But you can't deny the guts of him going in there in that condition back in 98. Him and Bret, the Iron Man match at WrestleMania 12. It bored me, quite frankly, in certain spots, but it was still a hell of an effort on both their parts. The ladder match at WrestleMania 10, need I say more? So, I for one hope that we have not seen the last of Shawn Michaels. We all know that these retirement stipulations have an expiration date on them. This is one of those occasions where I really hope that we don't see him stick to the stipulation. I don't want to see Shawn Michaels go out yet. I don't know that I'm ready for it. You know, I think in this world, you don't know what's going to happen when you wake up in the morning. And I know Shawn's beat up, his knees are in bad shape, but if physically he's still able to get in there and do what he does best, I would hate to think that if he's got another 2 years or something, or even if it's not a full-time schedule, if it's just a big match here and there, I would hate to think that, well, you know, the stipulation said that my career is over, I can't wrestle again. Yeah, so what? Everybody comes back. So hopefully we will not see the end of Shawn Michaels' career, but there's no doubt in my mind he's losing at WrestleMania. It's just a matter of how. How many tombstones will it take? How many gimmicks during the match will it take to get to that outcome where Undertaker pins Shawn Michaels? It'll be fun. It'll be interesting. And hopefully they will come to their senses, and that will be the match that ends the show. But we'll find out. We'll see. It's a loaded show. I just hope they get enough time. I'm very much looking forward to it, more than I think any WrestleMania in many, many years. And that's saying a lot. So, yep, should be fun. Two other little notes here I just want to get to before we break into some feedback. I was reading, I believe it was the Wrestling Observer, had a note. It was actually very brief, just kind of stuck in there. But it really, I don't know, it really upset me, I guess, when I saw it. Of course, Angelo Poffo is the father of the Macho Man Randy Savage and Leaping Lanny Poffo, a.k.a. the Genius. He passed away, Angelo did, about a week or two ago. And apparently, Randy Savage contacted WWE and TNA, asking them to send some sort of message to be read at his father's funeral. TNA did send something, and WWE decided to ignore the message from Randy Savage. Now, I don't know what the story is here. I don't know if maybe they didn't get the message. Maybe they sent something and it got lost in the mail. Or if they just said, we're going to ignore any communication at all that comes from Randy Savage. It makes me sad. I just, you know, Macho Man really to me is the last. I mean, I know it seems to me like WWE has, you know, they at least negotiate with the Warrior. And I think he will go into the Hall of Fame at some point. But it just seems like from that era, Bruno Sammartino aside, and his era kind of predates this, but he's the only one. And I just don't know what the beef is. I know the rumors. I don't believe them. I don't believe them. I've talked about these rumors before. I'm not going to bring them up again, but it just makes me sad. You know, the guy's father died. He was a big player in the wrestling industry, had a big career, was a well-known name, and just asked the two major organizations that are out there to send a little something nice in to be read at his funeral. I'll give TNA a lot of kudos for sending something in. And just shake my head, quite frankly, at WWE for ignoring the message. Maybe there's a reason. Maybe they have a good explanation for it, and we'll find out this week. But when I read that, it upset me. I don't know why, but it did. Speaking of upset, it's a nice little segue here. Eric Bischoff is very active lately on his Facebook page. He's become a Facebook fanatic. And he had commented, I guess somebody, because on his page, his avatar, his main photo, pushes his book, Controversy Creates Cash, which was from his WWE days. That was his WWE book. And somebody took him to task, why are you promoting a product from your competitor, blah, blah, blah. And Bischoff responded by saying something to the effect of, you know, I just got a royalty check from them last month for $50,000. You know, which is why I continue to promote these products. And I don't think it's any coincidence that within a day or two, this is great, on WWEshop.com, Eric Bischoff's book was marked down to $1.98. And it even says next to it in parentheses, save 92%. That's a hell of a sale right there. You get 92% off the original price. You can pick up Eric Bischoff's book for under $2 on WWE Shop right now. Of course, Bischoff went on his Facebook and responded to this and said, you know, at least I know WWE follows me on Facebook and it doesn't really matter because I sell a lot of books at their regular price on Amazon.com. I just thought that was great. There's no doubt why WWE did that. And I just think that, as petty as it seems, that's just fucking awesome. I mean, if Bischoff is going to go on the internet and brag about shit like that, you know what? You're better off keeping your mouth shut. $1.98. From what I have understood and heard from people that have read the book, it's not even worth that. So don't even bother. All right. Let's open up the mailbag here. Quite bulbous this week. Looks like it's had one too many hot pockets. I'm going to jump around a little bit here. I don't think I'm going to be able to get to everybody. I know I already responded to some people directly. Let's see here. Adam writes in, "Dear Solo Monster, do you feel Christian would have been better off sticking with TNA? Unless he wins Money in the Bank this year, he will be buried for sure." I think he made exactly the right decision. You cannot tell me with all the influx of talent now that TNA has had, which has obviously done them a lot of good, you cannot tell me that Christian would have continued to get a big push in TNA. He would have been even more buried than he... See, I can't even say he'd been buried in WWE. I guess that's the perception. And he's my pick to win Money in the Bank. But I think he made the right decision. Of the two companies, I would have gone with WWE too. And I don't think he... I don't think he would disagree with that. I haven't been able to ask him myself, but I think he made the right call. I disagree. All right. James writes in, "We're deep into WrestleMania season. So, what is your favorite WrestleMania theme song? I prefer WrestleMania 23's Ladies and Gentlemen by Saliva." Well, the best WrestleMania theme song is the original instrumental theme, but if you're talking about regular songs that they've used in recent years... as a fan of the 80s, I would have to go with Big Time. Peter Gabriel, WrestleMania 22. Let's see, this comes from Ralph. "Dear Solo Monster, let's take his second question here. Is it true WWE is going to have a Money in the Bank pay-per-view? Makes no sense to me because the match, even though it's only a few years old, has become a tradition at WrestleMania. Now I'm reading reports that since there is a pay-per-view coming up, the Money in the Bank winner at WrestleMania will probably be cashing in early, perhaps that same night." Well, there is going to be a Money in the Bank pay-per-view. I believe it's in July. And I agree. I think it's a bad idea. They disagreed. And they get to vote. I don't. So unfortunately, we're going to get a Money in the Bank pay-per-view. And I believe this will be the final Money in the Bank match at a WrestleMania. Danny in London writes in, "Longtime listener, have not really emailed in since around episode 58. Shame on you. in episode 102, someone emailed in and said they never really watch wrestling anymore on TV, but prefer instead to listen to the Sound Off as a substitute. I am 100% with that, as I believe the last piece of wrestling on TV I watched was Impact from the summer of 09. Wow. One of his questions here... If TNA did, in fact, win the Monday Night Wars... Excuse me for a second. I have to have a good laugh at this question. Okay, I'm back. Let's see. If TNA won the Monday Night Wars and WWE had been bought out and did not have TV time, and they were left to do nothing but house shows, would you watch the TNA product if it is exactly the same as it is now, or would you forget about wrestling altogether? Well... I will never forget about wrestling altogether. It's been such a part of my life. I couldn't just give it up. I mean, if you're a real fan, you can't just let go. It's like an addiction, you know? You have to be cured. I think I would give TNA... Here's what I think would happen. I would give TNA a chance. I would want them very much to succeed, as I do now. And I think that they would not change. I think we would continue to see exactly what we see every week. And eventually I would just stop watching after a couple of weeks. Because I'm not a hypocrite. If I feel I can't watch Impact now and it doesn't entertain me, why would I subject myself to it each week just because I'm a wrestling fan? So I would give them a shot. And when they inevitably disappointed me, I would give up on Impact and I would just watch classics on demand. In all honesty, I watch that now. I derive more pleasure from that than I do current TV most of the time. This current WrestleMania build aside... and I presume that that's probably what I would do. I would probably go to a Ring of Honor show every now and then when they come to New York. And that would probably be it. So let's hope that does not happen. Matt Cross writes in, "Dear Solo Monster, back in the year 1998, the WWF had a very successful run with stables. You had DX and the Nation of Domination, among others. DX has disbanded and reunited to huge success in marketing of products and the superstars in it. Isn't it amazing that with the great African-American talent on the roster, for example, they don't reform a new version of the Nation of Domination?" Well, I'm going to stop you right there. First of all, things like DX or the NWO, not that I think it'll be overly successful, but okay. You want to reunite those guys. The band is back together. They may be good for one run. I'm not a big fan of just reforming old factions for the sake of reforming old factions. You know, to me, I looked at Evolution as a New Age version of the Four Horsemen, but they weren't the Four Horsemen. You know? If the original is good, if you were a fan of the Nation of Domination from the late 90s, you know it's not going to be as good as it was then, especially with the product being PG. Let's be honest, the Nation of Domination does not fit in with that. So no, I think that would be a horrible idea. I think what you could do, if you want some sort of African-American faction, you know, it doesn't have to be an African-American faction of people who are disgruntled because of white people. Why can't you just put three or four black guys together because they're really good at what they do? They just happen to have the same skin color. It doesn't have to be a racial thing. I think there's enough racism in wrestling as it is. We don't need to exploit that anymore. So I disagree with that. But I do agree that there should be more factions. You know, you have Punk and the Straight Edge Society. Right now it consists of three people. Why not add one or two people? Hell, after WrestleMania, Rey Mysterio may be a part of that group. But I think there's enough people on the roster and young guys who could use the rub. I would love to see one or two more dominant factions on TV. I think that's an excellent idea. All right, Dan Kincaid wrote in. Love Dan. Talking about my WrestleMania 7 review on the last podcast. Going with memorable moments, let's see. Dan remembers Miss Elizabeth coming down to the ring to save Macho Man from Sherry, which, of course, I talked about last week. He remembers his grandmother tearing up when that happened. Well, I tear up now. And I'm not as old as your grandmother. What does that say about the angle? Let's see here. Dan also remembers wondering why Hulk Hogan ran into the ring at WrestleMania 9 and won the title. But there is one segment he wants to see if I remember, because he doesn't think they would ever do it now. They were building up a feud with Randy Savage and Jake the Snake Roberts. In this segment, Jake tied Randy up in the ring ropes and brought out his snake, which started biting Randy Savage's arm and led to Savage trying to fight back but acting like he was being slowly put to sleep by the venom of the snake and wildly swinging and falling all over the place. People were actually crying in the crowd as the group of officials desperately tried to get Savage out of the ring. Do you remember that at all? Do I remember it? That's what my all-time favorite WWE angle. This was from 1991. It was a Superstars taping just before the Survivor Series. And you could find it. It's actually on the Jake the Snake Roberts DVD. It might have been on the Macho Madness DVD. I don't know, but I don't remember. But this was ahead of its time in so many ways. I mean, back then, WWF was even more of a kiddie product than it is now. And this was the syndicated Saturday morning or Saturday afternoon Superstar show. This was a heavy, heavy angle. I mean, this was a real snake really biting Randy Savage. Now, granted, the snake was not a poisonous snake. And Savage would tell the story about how 12 days later the snake died. So it's more like Macho Man poisoned the snake, which I could totally believe. But this was an awesome, awesome, awesome angle. It was great. And you're exactly right. You would never, ever see this on WWE television right now. There's a time and a place for it. I wouldn't do something like that every week. But that's why I think it was so effective. That's why, God, I mean, it's going to be 20 years. It's going to be 20 years. And I remember that angle like it was yesterday. Because it just went so much against what they did at the time. It's just the sort of thing you never saw. And it was so heavy and it was so perfect. And that whole Savage-Roberts feud, which was aborted in early 1992. To me, I know that Savage beat him clean on that Saturday night's main event in February of 92. But to me, that feud never got the closure that it deserved. They should have taken that feud all the way to WrestleMania 8 and had a big blow-off. But they didn't do it. And that's the only bad part looking back on that rivalry. But that is one of my all-time favorite rivalries and probably my all-time favorite angle, quite frankly, in WWE. John writes, Dear Solomonster, do you think superstars like Triple H, Batista, Undertaker, Shawn Michaels, Rey Mysterio, all taking time off, retiring or what have you, do you think WWE would be better off combining the two rosters, or do you think they should have the two rosters as they have them now? I think they should combine them. I really do. I'm not a big fan of the draft. We're going to get a draft lottery on April 26th. The funny part about it is WWE has decreed behind the scenes that they want SmackDown talent on Raw. They want them kind of mingling on both shows as much as possible between now and the draft. Think about what I just said. And try not to chuckle, okay? If that doesn't tell you how meaningless the draft is, I don't know what does. Second part of John's question here. After listening to Sound Off 103, I'm wondering, what is it like having Rosie O'Donnell as a neighbor? Well, I can tell you that aside from the one time that she was changing and had the blinds up on her windows, it's pretty much fine. And for the record, for those of you who have asked, I just had the bandages off my eyes a couple of days ago, and my vision is almost restored to 2010 vision, so thank you for asking. Brendan Dando writes in. Of course, he himself, by the way, has a great podcast, the Michael and Dando Show, so check it out if you have not already done so. Anyway, he writes in to ask, it seems rather refreshing to not have Triple H in the main event of WrestleMania. I agree. However, what do you think are the chances that Triple H will use the Shawn Michaels-Undertaker match to turn heel? I'm thinking that maybe he comes out and costs Shawn the match. I think that is a horrible idea. Just atrocious, which is why I can see WWE doing it. This is not a match, quite frankly, which is going to have a tough enough time as it is, living up to the standard set by last year's match. This is not a match where outside interference is appropriate. This match needs to live or die on its own. I don't think they're dumb enough to have Triple H interfere. It certainly could go a long way. If Triple H is the man who costs Shawn Michaels his career, to me, you're saying the stipulation is completely meaningless. Because Shawn's career, if it really is coming to an end as far as a full-time active wrestler, it's essentially going to end as part of an angle, and to me that just doesn't feel right. You know, if it's going to be real, make it real. Put the match on last, Shawn loses, and he gets to wave and say his goodbye as the crowd stands and gives him a standing ovation, and you go off the air. I mean, that to me would make more sense. So, could they do it? Sure. I know Triple H is just dying to go heel. In some ways, I'm amazed he's been a babyface as long as he has. Think about it. I mean, he basically became a babyface after WrestleMania 22. In 2006, he's been a babyface for almost four full years. He's got to be itching to go back to being a heel. I just don't think that's the appropriate time to do it. Luis writes in, do the title lyrics of Leave the Memories Alone have an extra level of irony now considering Ric Flair's recent activities? Very perceptive. I would agree. I would agree, but you know, again, none of us should really be surprised by that turn of events. It is kind of comical. I mean, I remember them shoving that song down our throats. God, they played that song so much when Flair was retiring, and even that last Raw show when they gave him that big send-off, they played it in the background as they went off the air. And I mean, I like the song. It's actually a good song, but God damn, they beat that song to death with the Ric Flair retirement back in 2008. My God, I was so sick of that song, I couldn't listen to it for 6 months. Kyle writes in, Dear Solo Monster, I love your show and have been a loyal listener since episode one. Wow, one of the original Sound Off fans here. On your Sound Off 2 weeks ago, you had asked if there was anybody out there that listens to your show for their weekly fix of wrestling. I am one of them. I try to read the results online or listen to your show to see what has happened. And have a quick question for you. Is there any way WWE can save their tag team division? I'm going to give you a secret answer here. They can add more tag teams. How's that for a concept? Unfortunately, it's a foreign concept to WWE because they are of the mentality that tag teams don't mean money, which I agree with because it's almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you beat tag teams down enough to where they don't mean anything, then sure, you're not going to be able to make money off of them. Now, do I think that you could make money off tag team wrestling if you put the emphasis on them? Absolutely. Back in the 80s, you had a humongous assortment of tag teams. The Midnight Express, the Rock and Roll Express, the Steiner Brothers, the Road Warriors, Demolition, Harlem Heat, British Bulldogs, Dream Team, Heart Foundation, Rockers, Twin Towers, Power and Glory, Orient Express, Bushwhackers, Rhythm and Blues, Natural Disasters, Money Incorporated, the Head Shrinkers, the Quebecers, so on and so forth. And of course, in the 90s, you had a renaissance. In the late 90s, you had Edge and Christian, you had the Dudleys, you had the Hardys, you had the New Age Outlaws, you had the APA, among others. So, absolutely, I think they could have a resurrection, but you need the teams. And just judging from the roster in Florida Championship Wrestling, I don't think they have very many tag teams down there. So, I mean, you can train the young guys and then kind of put them together as a team, but you don't really have those old school teams that come up in the business together, which I think is unfortunate. Ruben Rios writes in with a great WrestleMania story to share, so I wanted to share it with all of you. He was watching WrestleMania 2000. He was 14 at the time, Ruben was, and he was with his family and friends, and when they said next year WrestleMania was coming to the Houston Astrodome, he went crazy. It was an awesome experience. His family and I, he and his family made the two-hour drive from their hometown to Houston in anticipation of a great show, and we were not disappointed. The only bad thing was that we had to park very far away because the construction of Reliant Stadium was going on. By the way, you know, Reliant Stadium is the building where WrestleMania 25 was held last year, not to be confused with the Astrodome. They're two different venues. Anyway, Ruben goes on to say, we sat on the floor, which I never like to do at wrestling events, but just looking up at the stage and the crowd was just an awesome sight. I totally disobeyed the warning from the security and stood on my chair the entire time. To sum it all up, I am so glad I was part of what is perhaps the greatest WrestleMania of all time. Fast forward to WrestleMania 25. Like everyone else, I believe this show was pretty good, but could have been better. The main highlight for me, other than seeing the awesome Undertaker Shawn Michaels match, was that my fiance went with me. Asking her to go to a wrestling show is just as hard as asking her to marry me. She doesn't watch wrestling much, but she loves John Cena and yelled from our seats in the upper deck of the Reliant Stadium as if he could hear her. She also learned from talking to the people waiting to get inside the stadium, as well as the people sitting around us, that the wrestling fans that attend these shows really are some of the nicest people you will ever meet. If anything, having her there with me and knowing she had a great time was my WrestleMania moment. Aw, that's so sweet. Grab a tissue here. Hopefully one day you can attend WrestleMania, and if there is a Mrs. Solomonster now or in the future and she goes with you, that's when you know you two are meant for each other. Thank you very much. Ruben from Texas. Thank you for sharing that. That was really cool, actually, Ruben. Thanks for writing in, and I will say this. If there ever is a Mrs. Solomonster, which I think is probably a ways off, but if there is, I would only hope she is as cool as your fiancé in that she would be willing to go to a wrestling show and not smack me for even asking her in the first place. Because, you know, some girls could be like that. Let's be honest. Even the girls listening to this show, and I know I have a lot of female listeners too, you know, write in and let me know, because you know a lot of women out there are like that. They kind of thumb their nose at wrestling. But I will say this. You know, I've been to some Ring of Honor shows here in Manhattan, and some people show up with their girlfriends, and the girlfriends look like they want to be any place in the world else other than the Manhattan Center for this Ring of Honor show. And then I look around, and I see another couple sitting somewhere else, and the girl is into it more than the guy. And I think to myself, I got to find me one of those. Sign me up for that. All right, moving on here. Tom writes in. His problem relates to WWE's lack of depth as it relates to its characters. Dear Solomonster, I know every wrestler has a gimmick, but very, very few of them actually have characters. Lack of any real character makes most of the WWE roster incredibly two-dimensional. For example, who exactly is Kofi Kingston? He's the guy who comes out to the ring, claps his hands together, and says, boom, boom, boom. There is absolutely no depth there. Same could be said for a guy like Dolph Ziggler. All he does is come out, run his hands through his hair, and says, hi, I'm Dolph Ziggler. John Morrison has the look of a rock star, but beyond his look and his flashy entrance, he doesn't really have any character to speak of. I could go on and on, but I think you get my point, and that is this. WWE needs to give depth to its cast of characters. Well, I agree. I agree 110%. And I think UFC is doing what WWE should do. You watch a show like The Ultimate Fighter, you watch some of these countdown specials that promote the UFC pay-per-views, which do big business, so you know these countdown specials work. It's all about character development. It's all about getting people to care about wanting to pay for a ticket or pay money for a pay-per-view to see these guys. You know, and even if they don't go to that degree, because, you know, they'll say, well, UFC is a completely different product than what we have. Back in the day, during the cartoon era of WWF, you would watch Wrestling Challenge or Raw or Superstars, and they would have these vignettes for a new character coming in. I mean, some of the most famous vignettes were for a guy that you may know by the name of Razor Ramon, eating at a restaurant down in Miami somewhere. The waiter comes over. He gets pissed off, throws the plate, flips the table over. You know, he's cruising in his car with a toothpick in his mouth. of course, they copied that with Carlito years later, and we all see how that did wonders for Carlito's career. But that was not because of the vignettes. That was just because WWE gave up on him because Carlito is probably the laziest guy in the entire roster. But I think those vignettes are something that we just don't see enough of, you know? As corny and campy as they may be, it gave more depth to the characters than you see now. Jeff Jarrett and those Music City USA vignettes, he would try to, you know, go into the recording studio. He'd be walking around like he was some sort of big shot, and they would kick him out of the building, or they wouldn't even let him in, you know? So right away, you knew that this guy was a real prick. You know, he's got a really high opinion of himself. He thinks he's a musician when he's really not that good. There was some level of depth to the characters, whereas you're absolutely right. A guy like Dolph Ziggler comes out and has his little catchphrase and introduces himself to people. And, I mean, what really is he beyond that? Now, if you sat him down in front of a camera and allowed him to talk like a normal person, you know, and again, it could be gimmicked in that he's kind of trying to come off as a heel and a real arrogant prick, but he speaks like a real person. He says, this is my goal, you know, in being here on SmackDown, or this is where I came from, this is what I aspire to be. It would give some level of depth that just does not exist right now. I agree with you wholeheartedly, 110%. Mark writes in, he'd like to share a WrestleMania memory of his own. Remembers being stabbed in the eye by his friend Gerard Sein moments into WrestleMania 25 in Houston. Didn't totally ruin his enjoyment of the show, but it stung like a bastard, and his eye was bloodshot for a few days afterwards. I know he feels guilty about it still, and it would amuse me greatly if you could do a little bit on proper sign safety at wrestling events for him. Oh, that's mean. That's cruel. I will say this, though. It's not so much about sign safety, but there is something to be said. If you are in one of the upper, well, not even upper rows so much, but if you're in one of the front rows of a wrestling event, why on earth would you think it's appropriate to hold up your sign for the entire event? These people really do exist, and they really do things like this. And there was one time after a Ring of Honor show why this person brought a sign to a Ring of Honor show, which at the time was not even being recorded for broadcast. I don't know. But I will say that when the guy left the show, well, I won't say he got his ass kicked, but he got roughed up a little bit by some fans in his section who did not appreciate the fact that they missed three quarters of the show because this idiot was holding his sign up. I don't know why he was holding the sign up, who he was holding it up for. I got a glimpse of the sign when the show was over, and he was actually holding it up for a wrestler who was not even performing on the show that night. So I don't know if that falls under sign safety. I would say that kind of falls under sign etiquette, so something to keep in mind in the future. Paul wants to know, dear Solomonster, what's your prediction for Impact's rating next week going up against the last Raw before WrestleMania? His prediction is about a 0.6 or a 0.7, but nothing higher than that. I'll give TNA the benefit of the doubt here and say that they're going to do the exact same rating they did last week. So a 0.8 or a 0.8, whatever. I think they'll basically do the same thing. For TNA's sake, I would like to think that there is a bottoming out point for them. And bottoming out point meaning that they will never go below a certain number. And, you know, is that number a 0.8 or is that number a 0.5? I don't know. But for TNA's sake, I think if they pull another 0.8 this week, they should be happy. I think if they can maintain their numbers, let WrestleMania pass, and then hopefully they've made enough changes and they've realized enough things and their numbers start to go up to reflect a better product, I think for them that would be the best possible outcome to all this. So my prediction for next week, for this week rather, would be a 0.8. Let's see here. Jared wants to know, what makes me so confident that WWE will not screw up the Undertaker streak? At least I think that's the question. I don't know if it's the streak or the build-up to their match at WrestleMania with him and Michaels. Well, I don't exactly have the utmost confidence in wrestling bookers in general, let's be honest. And they're not perfect people. Nobody is. But I would like to think WWE is smart enough not to to fuck up the Undertaker's streak because it's become, I think, something that, quite frankly, defines his career. And let's face facts here. Undertaker is not too far off from his own Hall of Fame induction. And I think one of the selling points of him going into the Hall of Fame is that he gets to go in as the only superstar in history to have gone undefeated at WrestleMania. Nobody else will ever do that. And if Undertaker ends up going 18-1, 19-1, 20-1, it doesn't serve any purpose other than to piss off the fans. That's really all it does. It does not serve any other purpose. Shawn Michaels, great example. Shawn Michaels has nothing left to prove in this business. Him beating The Undertaker, excuse me, at WrestleMania, is what does it mean to Shawn Michaels? It's just another little accomplishment. It's actually a big accomplishment, but for him, he doesn't need it. That's why I don't think he's going to win. In fact, I know he won't. It doesn't mean anything. So I don't think that they're that stupid. They're pretty stupid sometimes, but I don't think that they're that stupid. It's just like my gut instinct tells me that when Undertaker goes into the Hall of Fame in a couple of years, however long it is, he'll be going in as the only superstar in history to go undefeated at WrestleMania, and that's the way it should be. All right, a couple more here. Ronnie writes in. Sorry about that. Yes, I do indeed. I have, I think I might have mentioned this before, I have Sheamus' theme as my new ringtone on my phone, and I thought I had turned that off, so let's just put that aside here. Anyway, shame for fame. Ronnie writes in, just had to write in and ask, why are you so high on Kofi Kingston? On at least two occasions, he's blown spots during his feud with Randy Orton, and it seems as though he busted Batista open hard way last Monday. I personally think he is terrible on the microphone, and the fact that every one of his moves has some catchy name only goes to show his gimmick is directed towards little kids. Well, I responded to Ronnie, who's a good guy, he writes in a lot. I responded to him directly, but I felt it was worth mentioning here. I disagree about Kofi on the microphone. Once he dropped the silly Jamaican accent, and I started hearing his normal voice, I thought he sounded great on the microphone. I really did. As a performer, I think he's really good. He has blown quite a few spots recently. But then again, you know, his confidence may be shot. I mean, you've got a guy who one week had the rocket strapped to his back. He had all of Madison Square Garden chanting his name. I was there that night. And the next minute, you're not even booked yet for the biggest show of the year. So my suggestion, as I mentioned to Ronnie, is cut the dreadlocks, drop the boom boom crap, put a suit on the guy, let him heal it up a little bit. Let's see how it goes. I think Kofi would actually excel in that role. As good as he is, as the happy-go-lucky, you know, character that the kids love, I think if you do that, I really think it would work wonders for him. I think he worked, I'm pretty sure he worked heel when he was down in OVW. I think he was a heel, and, you know, I think he'd be good at it, so why not let him do it? Give him, what have you got to lose? The guy's sitting on the sidelines. He's not even on the WrestleMania card right now. Although, like I said earlier, hopefully that'll change after Raw tomorrow night, and he'll be added to Money in the Bank. Chris writes in, just wondering, since WWE owns all the copyrights for WCW, does that also mean they own the name the Four Horsemen? If not, I would love to see a reformation of the faction. Well, this just goes to what I said earlier in a letter I just read a couple of minutes ago. I don't want to see another Four Horsemen, because no matter what incarnation of the Horsemen it takes, it'll never live up to the original. Just, if you're going to take four young guys in TNA, including AJ Styles, and have Ric Flair be their mouthpiece, yes, I can understand why it would make sense for them to be the Horsemen, but you're never going to live up to expectations. Let them be themselves. Come up with their own name. It doesn't matter anyway, because WWE does own the Four Horsemen name, so nobody else can use it. All right. Jonathan writes in from the UK. In light of WWE's recent banning of steel chair shots to the head, I was wondering what you think have been the best and worst chair bumps you've seen in WWF or WWE. One notable example, in his opinion, this being Jonathan's, was the Undertaker's chair shot to Mr. Kennedy at the 2006 Survivor Series after their first blood match. I remember that. That was pretty gruesome. And maybe it was a shoot, because I know Undertaker and some other guys backstage, Shawn Michaels, John Cena, nobody liked working with Mr. Kennedy. But to me, the one that jumps out in my head, there's three other examples. I'll just rattle them off here. One of them wasn't to the skull so much as it was to the face. This was one of the most wicked chair shots I've ever seen. This was on an edition of Raw from 1998. And this might have actually been before WrestleMania 14. This was during the height of the Ken Shamrock feud with The Rock. And Shamrock, I believe, was in a match, had a member of the Nation in the ankle lock. There was interference. So Shamrock is in the ring. He's on his knees. The Rock has a steel chair in his hand, comes into the ring, and Shamrock is on his knees, looks up, and basically motions and says, "Bring it. You know, give it to me." And The Rock proceeds to hit him square in the face with the steel chair. You know, it looked like Shamrock ducked his head a little bit, maybe hit him in the forehead, but he smacked him in the face. Remember the movie The Hangover? When the guy takes the taser to the face, he goes, "In the face!" That's what happened here. Right in the face. I mean, you can find the video on YouTube. It is sick. The other two examples, I mean, Rock and Mankind, take your pick. There are about 13 or 15 unprotected chair shots to the skull during that I Quit match from the 99 Royal Rumble. If you watch Beyond the Mat, you saw plenty of footage of it in there. Just, I look back on that now, and it makes me sick. Because even for that era, when shit like that was commonplace, Rock was just way over the line in that match. And again, it was part of the plan for the match. I mean, you can only blame The Rock so much, but you can blame Foley just as much for agreeing to... It was probably Foley's idea in the first place, and his family was sitting in the front row. How smart is that? But the sickest chair shot, for me, was probably the very first Hell in a Cell back in 97. Shawn Michaels, ironically, and The Undertaker, making history yet again. And it was towards the very end of the match. It was actually the last bump in the match before the lights went out and Kane made his debut. Shawn was just wearing the proverbial crimson mask, and Undertaker had just gone outside to retrieve a chair, came back in, and just walloped Shawn right in the skull. You heard the chair echo through the arena. I mean, he cracked that chair over Shawn Michaels' skull and rattled his brains like scrambled eggs. That, to me, was the sickest chair shot I can remember in WWE. And actually, now that we're talking about chair shots, there's another one I remember that was right up there with the Shamrock Rock one. This was actually in 2002. Brock Lesnar had just made his debut, and he was running roughshod. And at the time, they started Brock out by having a feud with the Hardy Boys, because the Hardys were very much over with the audience, and they figured that it'll help Brock. It'll give Brock some rub by going up against the Hardys. So there was one edition of Raw. It was after a match, I think. Brock had Matt Hardy set up for a powerbomb. So Matt is bent over between Brock's legs. And out of nowhere, out of frame, comes Jeff Hardy with a steel chair. He hit Brock Lesnar in the face with this chair. And the chair made a noise that I've never heard before. I mean, it sounded like a gunshot went off. And Brock, who was a great bumper, I mean, he was a great bumper for a guy his size, flew. I mean, he just flew out of the ring, landed on his feet. It just pissed him off, really. I mean, Jeff Hardy smacked him so hard in the face with that chair, and it made such a noise. It was great. I mean, the sound effect was great. I mean, I could do without seeing stuff like that on TV now, but that's another one that I would be remiss if I did not add that to the list. Dear Solomonster, I noticed the last couple of years there are a few websites taking bets on WrestleMania. Is that the case again this year? And if so, where? I am not aware of this. I do not know where they would be. But to me, it just sounds incredibly stupid. So if you're looking to bet on WrestleMania, I wouldn't do that. That just seems awfully stupid to me. Victor writes in, he seems to think that perhaps, we may be in for a Macho Man versus Vince McMahon match. How possible does that sound for a future WrestleMania? Keep dreaming, Victor. You and I are in the same boat in that we'd love to see Randy Savage back. Savage and McMahon in a match. Yeah, Rosie O'Donnell's will fly before that happens. The second Victor to write in the week here. He's a big fan of the Diva matches on SmackDown, not so much on Raw. He's a little concerned that when the draft takes place later on in April, that this may change. What are my thoughts on this? Well, you know, I don't pay very much attention, quite frankly, to the Divas division, because I know WWE does not pay very much attention to it. They don't give them a lot of time in their matches. I find many of their matches to be sloppy, more so on Raw than SmackDown, you're right. But I really don't care either way. I know you sound like a fan of the Divas matches. I think that's great. And for your sake, I hope that does not change. If I were in charge of WWE, for you, Victor, I would keep the Divas on SmackDown exactly where they are. Let them keep doing what they're doing because you seem to enjoy it. But I can tell you that from my perspective, it's just not the sort of thing I pay very much attention to. Yusuf writes in one of his questions here regarding pyro at WrestleMania. If it's going to be an open-air event that starts at 4 o'clock p.m. in Arizona, that means a majority of the event will likely be played with the sun out. I am afraid that the pyro won't provide the visual aesthetic that it did for WrestleMania 24. Do you think that if WWE doesn't like that, that being the way the pyro looks on TV, that they would ask the stadium crew to close the roof? I don't see them asking the stadium crew to close the roof for any reason other than inclement weather. If they're planning an outdoor, quote-unquote outdoor show, then they know what they're getting into going in. The only reason to close the roof would be in the event of an emergency, if it started raining or something to that effect. So, no, I don't see them asking anybody to close the roof. And quite frankly, I don't really give a shit about the pyro. You had a wrestler practically burned to death because of a pyro accident last month. I don't watch WrestleMania for pyro. It makes for a great visual. But you know what? WrestleMania 24, it was daylight outside when the event started, and they had the aircraft carriers, like, flying overhead, the jets, and they had some pyro, and it looked great. And I think that's all you need. Beyond that, I wouldn't worry about pyro. Quite frankly, you've got so many matches on this card, I'd just be concerned with giving everybody enough time to have their match and not cutting anybody short. Unless it's the Orton-Rhodes-DiBiase match. Then you can cut that short. Alright, James here just watched an old Raw clip from YouTube when The Nation and DX were feuding in 98, and Jerry Lawler referred to The Rock as the greatest Intercontinental Champion of all time. Total crap, but it begs the debate, who is the greatest Intercontinental Champion of all time? Well, I know one man in particular, if you ask him, he'll say that it was him, but I'm going to go with Mr. Perfect. I know more people held the belt more times than he did. He didn't have any particularly memorable matches aside from the ones with Bret Hart during that reign, but I don't know. I think back to the old Intercontinental belt, and the image that pops in my head is Mr. Perfect, wearing that singlet with the belt strapped around his waist, chewing gum with the towel in hand, and Bobby Heenan coming up the rear. That's my vision of what a real Intercontinental champion should look like. You know, the Honky Tonk Man calls himself the greatest of all time. He held it longer than anybody else. Chris Jericho is the only 9-time Intercontinental Champion in the world. But I'm going to go with Mr. Perfect. Edward writes in from Overland Park, Kansas. With this week, it was reported that starting in January, WWE banned chair shots to the head and added it to their wellness policy. Does this mean that if John Cena goes crazy and hits Batista with a chair to the skull, that he would have one strike against him and be suspended for 30 days? I was wondering if you knew more about the whole rule. I know they are doing this to protect the talent from concussions and such, but I think that it takes away a little of how wrestling entertainment used to be and definitely points to more boring no DQ matches in the future. I'm sad. What are your thoughts? I'm not sad at all. I think you can still have chair shots in wrestling and they don't have to be to the skull. Or you just have to hope and enforce that wrestlers are going to very obviously put their hand up and protect themselves. But to me, that just looks incredibly fake. So why not just avoid it altogether? A well-placed chair shot to the back, or if you're going to work over a body part, maybe as part of an angle, take a chair to the knee, is perfectly acceptable. Maybe attempt to hit somebody in the head, but then they dodge it or they block it. But I'm not sad at all. Anything the company does to protect their talent is fine with me. We've seen far too many guys have too many issues, guys dying, doing stupid things that may well be a result of concussions and injuries they sustain because of stupid bumps involving gimmicks and props and foreign objects. And I applaud the company for doing it. You know, now the blood thing is a different story. I can applaud the goal, you know, or the idea behind it. I think they're taking that a little too far. But it's, you know, the chair thing I equate to pile drivers. You know, people were throwing freak fits when WWE, behind the scenes, essentially banned pile drivers. The only pile driver you ever see is from The Undertaker, or Kane, every now and then when they bust out the tombstone, because those guys have tenure, they have seniority, they've been doing the move for so many years, and they trust them enough to do the move properly. But you cannot remember, actually, I shouldn't say that, I remember the last time a regular pile driver was used in WWE. It was actually back, I want to say it was 2002 or 2003. It may have actually been earlier than that, but it was an angle involving Val Venus and China. I think it was when Val was part of the Right to Censor, and he gave China a pile driver, and it was a big injury angle. They were trying to educate people that this was a big move that would put you out for a long time. Of course, Kurt Angle was actually pile-driven on concrete by Steve Austin during their feud in 2001 to play up the fact that Angle had a bad neck. But you cannot point to any instances since that time in WWF, 7, 8, 9 years now, where they've used the pile driver. They banned it. And you know what? I don't think anybody notices anymore. Nobody bats an eyelash. The pile driver is probably one of the most dangerous basic maneuvers in wrestling. And they banned it because they just didn't want to take any chances, especially with all those guys that were suffering neck injuries. And you know what? There's something to be said for that, because the last couple of years, you haven't heard any stories about wrestlers having to go see Dr. Youngblood in San Antonio for spinal fusion surgery. You know, but at one point, you know, Austin was the first big name to have that procedure done. Then you had Lita, you had Chris Benoit, you had Rhino, you had, I think Hurricane had that surgery. Scotty Zuhati, Test. And you don't really hear about that anymore. Hopefully it stays that way. People over time will not even notice these things. They're not going to notice, hey, I can't remember the last time that somebody took a chair shot to the head. And that'll be okay, just like it's okay that we don't see people doing pile drivers anymore. All right, last question I'm going to take here comes from Ant, who writes in from the UK. With WrestleMania approaching, he felt it was only right to look back on old Manias, and of course some were classic, some were not. However, looking at them, I can see the point at where some of them became the start of a new era in WWE. So, for example, WrestleMania 1 was the beginning. WrestleMania 10 was the new generation era. WrestleMania 12 was the culmination of the new generation with Bret vs. HBK. This would lead the way for stars including Triple H, Steve Austin, Mick Foley, and The Rock. WrestleMania 14 was the beginning of the Attitude Era. WrestleMania 17 was the end of the Attitude Era. WrestleMania 18 was the final Mania under WWF. WrestleMania 21 ushered in the new guard, including Orton, Cena, and Batista. WrestleMania 24 was the new start of the PG era. Do you agree or disagree with any of them? I agree with all of them except for WrestleMania 24. WWE was doing the PG thing long before WrestleMania 24, at least a year or two, if not more. I don't look back at WrestleMania 24 and think, wow, that was the start of the PG era. So that's the one I would disagree with, but the others are I think, dead on. I agree 100%. The one that strikes me the most is WrestleMania 14. There's something about that pay-per-view that just seemed different to me. It seemed like it really was the start of a brand new era for that company. It just felt different. All right, so that was a humongous mailbag. I answered way more questions than I thought I would, so I hope you all appreciate that. Cinch up the bag here. If you have questions of your own, like to, of course, replenish them, thesolemonster@gmail.com is the email address, as always. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/solemonster. And, of course, you can download this show for free in the iTunes Music Store. You can subscribe and have the show delivered to you automatically through iTunes. So definitely check that out. So that's going to do it. Pete Rose hosting Raw tomorrow night. And a live episode of Impact. Hopefully they'll get their act together. For their sake, I certainly hope so. WrestleMania 1 week away. I will likely be doing a podcast next weekend before the big pay-per-view. Keep in touch with me on Twitter to find out what my plans are as far as that goes. And, yeah, road to WrestleMania, almost here. Getting excited. It's WrestleMania, baby. It's what it's all about. So until next time, be well. Stay safe. Keep it locked in right here to sescoops.com. There's a big week coming up and a bigger weekend next weekend. If you're a fight fan, you got fightscoops.com. If you're a wrestling fan, and let's be honest here, you wouldn't be listening to the show if you weren't. Keep it locked into this website. We got a lot of good stuff coming up for you, and hopefully 105 on the air next weekend. Take it easy, guys. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to The Sound Monster.
You know, I really just don't understand what they're doing.
Anybody agree with me out there?
I mean, anybody. Come on, throw me a bone here.
Probably the single dumbest thing I've ever seen in my entire life.
God, I love this business.
On SE Scoops.